From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. We're having a very important discussion today about overdose awareness and recovery. Is someone that you love at risk for overdose? Do they have substance use issues and have yet to find their way into recovery? We're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about those risks and what you should do. If that describes you, we're going to be talking about what you should do in response to your own needs, your own health, in terms of overdose awareness and prevention. I'm joined by two guests today. We have first Jennifer Subkowiak, who's a recovery navigator at Cooley Recovery Center. Jennifer, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers today.
Thank you.
Jenny Steele is with us as well, prevention specialist at Vivint Health. Jenny, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
There are quite a number of events going around the Cooley region this month throughout August related to overdose awareness and overdose prevention, and we're going to talk about those later. But let's start with you, Jenny Steele. I want to start by talking about why it's important, of all the areas surrounding addiction, why is it specifically important to talk about overdose awareness and overdose prevention and overdose recovery?
Well, overdose is something that can often be prevented. It's a matter of life and death, you know, and it's not something that should be taken lightly. It affects a lot of different people, and it's not just the person with the addiction that is affected. Those people that suffer from the overdose are family members, are community members. And so there's a trickle-down effect, and we as a community suffer when the individuals suffer. So we work really hard to educate people on how to recognize the signs of an overdose, how to prevent overdose, how to treat overdose, and to get the supplies out there to combat it.
Jennifer Subkowiak, what is an overdose? What constitutes an overdose?
An overdose is when an individual takes too much of a narcotic substance or any illicit mood-altering substance that is their body is not able to handle enough of.
So does it? You think of the stereotypical case or the classic case, so to speak, of somebody who's completely unconscious and unresponsive. Is that always the case?
No, it is not. Each substance makes a person's body react differently.
What are some of the symptoms? Jenny, you mentioned teaching people about some of the signs of overdose that you have people look out for. What are those?
So sometimes a person might either be breathing really heavily or slowly or not at all. Sometimes they could be sweating profusely or having really clammy skin. They could be really pale or dusky looking, unconscious or in and out of consciousness, unable to sit up on their own or stay awake. They could be very lethargic or mumbling, not making sense when they're talking, very disoriented. Seizure is another possible effect of an overdose, although not as common.
How do you know how you should intervene in a situation like that? Are you always, obviously, if somebody's like passed out or whatever, that becomes a medical emergency. How do you know if it's something that you can help somebody deal with in the context that you're already in, or if you need to like usher them to a medical professional of some kind?
So we usually tell someone to try to make sure that the person isn't just sleeping and to really know whether or not they're actually having an overdose by recognizing those symptoms that I just mentioned. And also maybe, you know, trying to like shake them or like rub roughly against their sternum, causing a little bit of pain. If they're just sleeping, those kind of things should wake them up. If not, then there's a good chance they are having an overdose. And if they have Narcan on them, we recommend that they administer Narcan at that point if they're not breathing and they're not conscious. And then, of course, calling 911 and then performing rescue breathing is extremely important because Usually, when a person is unconscious and having an overdose, they are not breathing, and getting the rescue breaths going is going to help save a person's life because the oxygen is extremely important for brain function.
We've heard a lot about Narcan in the last 5 or 10 years. Jennifer, how readily available is that?
Narcan is very available in the last year. It has been being more available at all local businesses have supplies of Narcan. We as a community have been offering it free to anybody that wants it, whether you are in active addiction or you know of somebody that is, or if you just want to be prepared if you come across somebody that is overdosing. The rates in the La Crosse community have been extremely high in the last 2 years for overdosing. Fatalities from overdosing has been increasing by the numbers since the beginning of this year, 2023, and we want to just make sure that anybody and everyone that would like to have Narcan or think that it's important for your business or place to live, to have Narcan, we will make sure that we can get you supplied with that.
And who does someone need to reach out to in order to get their hands on some of that?
Here at Vivint Health, we have a pretty good supply of that. You can come into our office at 811 Rose Street and you can get what you need. We generally administer the intramuscular injection type of Narcan, which comes in a vial, and we give the syringes and the vials out. The nasal Narcan is a little more expensive, so that typically goes to businesses and local organizations because of it being more expensive. We don't give it out to them in as big of quantities. They don't use it as frequently as the general public does. So we supply people like the public library with that, or I just did a Narcan training recently at the People's Food Co-op across the street from one of our parks where some of our unhoused clients populate. So when they do use them, then they contact us for replacements. But we have Narcan available. We can also bring it out on mobile deliveries that we do twice a week, and we do homeless outreach in the community twice a week. So we often distribute that while we're going around to individuals as well. And then the County Health Department has it available, as well as other organizations. I recently talked to Kate with the library, and she told me that they recently applied for a grant to get a Narcan vending machine at the public library, which is absolutely wonderful to hear. They use it quite a bit over there, so I'm very hopeful that that'll go through, and that'll just be one more step into making it even more accessible for people.
That's very interesting. So, what kind of training does someone have to go through to be able to administer Narcan?
It's not real extensive. It's just a brief overview of recognizing what the signs and symptoms of an overdose are, understanding that aside from administering Narcan, the importance of performing rescue breathing and calling for 911, because after you do give Narcan, it is important to stay with the person and understand that Narcan only lasts for a certain amount of time. And once that life of the Narcan is done, an overdose can start back up. So understanding that and knowing that sometimes it takes more than one dose of Narcan, depending on how much substance a person has taken and their tolerance. So kind of just going over those things with a person and then making sure they understand where to inject or how to administer the nasal Narcan, and knowing that they need to stay with a person, knowing that they need to make sure that if for any reason they need to leave, maybe to go get a phone to call 911 or for any other reason, that they know the position to put a person in, a recovery position, so that in case a person were to aspirate, because Narcan does make a person go into withdrawal and it can make people vomit sometimes. So knowing to put the person on their side so that they, in case they do vomit, they don't choke on their vomit. Just going over all those things with them, explaining some of the legal issues surrounding overdose and Narcan administration, and calling 911 and some of the concerns people have and their reluctancy to call 911 when those situations happen, and knowing their resources. So once we go through all of that, and I often will, have examples of the different types of Narcan with me to show people, then that's pretty much, they're considered to be trained. And they're, I always give them my business card so they have the opportunity to ask me as many questions as they want and can always come back in and do more trainings. Actually, just got an email a minute ago asking me to come and do more trainings at the food co-op. So that's a pretty popular place in town. Where the staff just want to be able to be as well prepared as possible because they see a lot of people in and out of there that could potentially suffer an overdose. So I think it's great that our community members are interested in being prepared and understanding the importance of knowing how to use it and what to do in the event that that does happen.
Definitely.
So it's important that if you can't find a training or anybody in your area to train you, you can always go to Narcan.com.
Narcan.com, Narcan.com.
Yes.
Good. Thank you for pointing that out. We're talking with Jennifer Subkowiak from Cooley Recovery Center and Jenny Steele from Vivent Health. And we're talking about overdoses today on Newsmakers. And each of our guests is not only a provider in that area and able to assist and educate people in that area, but also has personal experience in the area of overdoses. And thankfully, are here to share their stories with us, and I think that's wonderful. Jennifer Sokowiak, let's start with you. Where does your story with however you want to phrase it, addiction and later overdose, where does it begin for you?
Yeah, I was a late bloomer, as they say, for becoming an addict. I was in my late 30s before I started using illegal drugs. My drug of choice was methamphetamine. And over the course of my years using methamphetamine, I started to IV inject the drug. And you don't really think about overdose when you think of a stimulant. But in the last few years, in this community especially, the fentanyl has been more prominent in almost every single drug there is, including marijuana. And even like cocaine, and methamphetamine, as well as heroin. The fentanyl has been out of control in this community. And so when you're an IV drug user and you're out there using a stimulant, the last thing that's going to come across your thought process is an overdose. The day that this happened to me, I'm an overdose survivor. The day that this happened to me, I wasn't alone. I was at a friend's house and I injected methamphetamine into my arm. And when that happened, it was a matter of minutes. I was blacking out. I was struggling breathing. I was vomiting. I was sweating very, very profusely. And I blacked out. I woke up in the emergency room by myself. So whoever the kind person was that brought me to the emergency room at the hospital, they left me there on the front doors of the hospital, but they at least got me to a safe place. I still to this day have no idea who the person was that took me there, but I'm grateful that they did. When I kind of came to out of the blackout, a nurse, a very awesome, kind, wonderful lady nurse was with me, and she held my hand and she was very, very empathetic of me, and she I asked her why I was there, what was going on, and she said it was an accidental ingestion of an opiate. And I was confused because I didn't do opiates. I did methamphetamine. And so they explained to me that sometimes in the mixture, when the drugs are being mixed up, there becomes things called fentanyl hotspots in the drugs. And that in my shot, or I say the IV that had the methamphetamine in it, there was a hot spot of fentanyl in my shot that I had no idea that it would even have occurred. And it was too much for my body to handle. So I went into immediate overdose. And she told me that she was very glad that I was alive and that she was happy that my life was saved and that if I ever did it again, I may not survive the next time. So that put me into immediate lifestyle change. That woke me up, opened my eyes to a long road to recovery. And in a few weeks, I will be 2 years clean and sober. And I'm very grateful every single day that I have the people in this community that support me and that I can now change my life to change other people's lives and be out there helping people realize that they can have a good life and that they deserve one.
2 years. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you.
So up to that point, the overdose experience notwithstanding, like were there w when you were actively involved in using methamphetamine, were you did you think of yourself as someone who was addicted to that, or did you think of that as something just that you used recreationally? It was just part of your life, and leave me alone. I know what I'm doing.
In the beginning, I was a very functioning addict. I still continued to have a job. I had a home. I had a vehicle. I had a great life. I had an amazing family that loved me and trusted me. And then methamphetamine takes a toll on your life very quickly. In a matter of months, I had lost everything and I ended up living a lifestyle of a drug addict out on the streets. I was homeless for 4 years prior to me getting clean. And the La Crosse Police Department stepped in and helped me save my own life.
That's I appreciate Jennifer. I appreciate you sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
Jenny Steele with Vivint Health is with us here as well, talking about overdose. Jenny, you have your own experience in that issue. Would you mind sharing that with us in whatever form you think is appropriate for this conversation?
Sure. A year ago, May 11th, I lost my husband of almost 10 years to an overdose. He had a long battle with mental health issues and was an alcoholic. And so he was on a lot of psychiatric medications. And it was very difficult to tell that he was using anything else because sometimes his behavior would fluctuate based on his mood or whether or not he was taking his meds and whether or not he was drinking on his meds. I knew that he had used various substances at different points in time, but I thought that those were things we had overcome in the past. He was shot by the police as an unarmed black man in Chicago when he was 18 years old and had a bullet lodged in his spine and never got the proper therapy for that. And so he self-medicated often. And then when we got
So
together,
as a means of pain control.
correct,
Okay. Wow.
and to cope with his PTSD.
Yeah.
And then when we got together, I helped him get into like regular therapy, and in the pain medicine, so he could start getting some help with his back pain. For a while, it went okay. Eventually, his doctor put him on some oxycodone and he got addicted. Then his doctor lost his job and no one would prescribe him the pain medicine anymore. I thought that he had figured out a way to make it work with other meds that they were giving him and other therapies. But unannounced to me behind my back, he had started snorting heroin. One day he came to me, and knowing I had been a nurse in detox, he was really sick and not feeling well and confided in me and told me that he had been snorting heroin behind my back and asked me to help him detox at home. And so I did, and it was pretty awful, but we made it through it. And I thought, okay, we can figure this out and make it work. And for a while, things were great. I could tell he was really trying and staying sober and seemed healthy, but addiction is a very, very long road, and recovery is a long road. And when you have significant mental health issues, which usually go hand in hand, it is very, very difficult, even with the strongest support system. And that's what a lot of people don't realize and think about is that, some people have a good support system and it's a struggle for them, and other people don't have a support system at all. So I can't imagine how hard it is for them. And so as time went on, he started trying other things. He didn't want to go back to the heroin, but he was doing these things behind my back because he knew I didn't approve. He knew that I wanted him to be sober and take care of himself. I wanted to grow old with him. And because of his mental health issues and addiction, he would find himself in and out of trouble as well. And so he spent periods of time where he was incarcerated because he would have moments where his behavior would get him in trouble. I attempted to get him into inpatient treatment, but his probation officer didn't see the value in that. Thought sending him to prison for a year was more appropriate, even though I had everything set up for him. He got out of prison after a year, and I could see him sliding into the same behavior. Our marriage wasn't in the best spot, place, but I was still trying to be supportive. But there was a lot of time he was spending away from the house, so I wasn't really aware of what was going on. I wasn't working at Vivint Health at the time, and I really didn't know a lot about Narcan. So I didn't have it at home, and I didn't know what he was doing. One day, he had been gone for a couple of days and came home in the middle of the night and woke me up at about 4:30 in the morning, standing at the side of our bed, trying to talk to me and apologize for his behavior and wanting to give our 4-year-old daughter a kiss. And as he reached over to kiss her, he complained of leg pain and fell over and started having a seizure. It was then that I realized what was going on, and I tried to help him the best I could, but his pulse stopped. And I did CPR until the medics came, but I didn't have the Narcan I needed to save him. And all the CPR in the world couldn't reverse the overdose that he was going through. And so he didn't make it. There wasn't anything they could do for him. My daughter woke up in the process and saw her dad dying on the bedroom floor at 4 years old.
I'm so sorry. I'm very sorry.
When the autopsy came back, they told me that he had cocaine and fentanyl in his system. And he was not an everyday user. He was a more of a recreational user. And that is something at Vivint Health that I see a lot with people that I try to really impress upon people, when they come in and we offer fentanyl testing strips and Narcan, because those are some of the people that are most susceptible to overdoses because their tolerance isn't as high. They're not used to using. People that are fresh out of jail and prison are used to using certain amounts prior to going in, and when they get out, they think they need to jump back into what they were using before they went in, and they haven't been using while they've been in, so their bodies, it's a shock to them. And a lot of people overdose that way. If there's anything I can impress upon people, is to remember that addicts are real people with real feelings, real lives that deserve respect and compassion. They have families that deserve respect and compassion, and they deserve to have their community care enough to want to save their life and give them a chance to turn it around and an opportunity to make a change. And it's really easy for someone that hasn't been stricken with addiction or had the to experience a loved one with addiction to put their nose up or turn their back and tell them to just not use or whatever other cliche term they want to use. It's free to be kind to people, you know, and a little bit of empathy goes a really long ways.
First of all, I'll let people know we're not spending a lot of today's conversation talking about addiction recovery. We are going to spend an entire hour talking about that in a few weeks' time with a different panel that we're arranging. Today, we're talking specifically about the issue of overdose. We've spent a lot of time talking about Narcan, where to get it, how you can learn how to use it. Those kinds of things. And now I want to talk about a series of events that are going on in the area through the month of August, because the August, is it the 30th or the 31st, is Overdose Awareness Day, Overdose Prevention Day. But rather than spend just one day on it, a whole consortium of organizations in the Cooley region are spending the month of August promoting the awareness and prevention of overdoses. So Jennifer Subkowiak, let's go back to you and learn about some of these events that are going on in August.
Both Jenny and I belong to an organization called Alliance to Heal. There's many different businesses and organizations that have members from each of those, and we have made a large group called the Alliance to Heal. And that also is through the La Crosse County Health and S Human Services building and department. And together we've all decided that Overdose Awareness Day, which is August 31st, the last Thursday of the month, would be a very important day. For that day, obviously, but we wanted to bridge the gap between the addiction and the overdose awareness. So we've created some events to go through the month, actually, all through August into the Sunday, September 3rd, where we would like to invite anybody in the community that's interested. We have a Bridging the Gap. It's called a resource fair where we've invited all resources in the state of Wisconsin for treatment. So treatment can be anything from AODA counseling. It can be veteran services. It can be harm reduction services. It can be inpatient detox facilities, inpatient rehab facilities, sober living houses. There's so many different types of different pieces to the puzzle of recovery, and it all starts with deciding to get treatment. So we wanted to have a resource fair on Tuesday, August 22nd, that will go from 3 o'clock till 6 o'clock here at Cooley Recovery Center. Our address is 933 Ferry Street, in La Crosse, kind of behind Mayo Hospital. And then after that event, we will also be having a candlelight vigil. That will be on Wednesday, August 30th, so the evening before Overdose Awareness Day. And that will start at 6 p.m. here at Cooley Recovery Center. We'll just do a short ceremony with candles in our Healing Rock and Memorial Garden. And you can also purchase posters for your loved one with their digits on there that we can put out in our Healing Rock Garden forever. If you would like to have it back, you can have it back. But we also are showing them at our other event, which would be on Sunday, September 3rd. And it's a home run event. It's a 5 and 10K. And it's our annual fundraiser for Cooley Recovery. And we run for those we have lost to the disease of addiction. So you can walk. You don't have to run. I will be walking. I will not be running. But you can walk if you would like, or you can just show up and be supportive. Anybody is allowed to attend, and you can register on either Cooley Recovery's webpage or on Facebook. On our Facebook page, we have more information about all of these events on there. And we would love to have everyone and anyone that would like to be there for those events.
On the actual day, August 31st, there will be a proclamation by Mayor Reynolds at the Bandshell at Riverside Park here in La Crosse, for overdose awareness. And then there'll be a small ceremony to recognize some individuals that have actually saved lives, saved people from overdose.
And that's going to be at Riverside Park on the 31st.
Correct, at the Bandshell
At what time?
at 11:30 a.m.
Okay. I certainly want to thank you both for being here, for sharing your stories, and for giving us some really valuable information that hopefully people can use to good effect in either their own life or the lives of those that they love. If it becomes necessary, hopefully less and less it becomes necessary. But it sounds like it's still a big issue in our community, and the information will be very helpful. Jennifer Subkowiak is a recovery navigator with Cooley Recovery Center. Jennifer, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Jenny Steele is a prevention specialist with Vivint Health. Jenny, thank you for your time today as well.
Thank you as well.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a comment about today's show, I'd love to hear from you. Our email is newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. And if you'll pardon a pretty abrupt segue, we're going to move from a very serious issue to a whole lot of fun right after this. We're talking about Larry Fest. It's coming up in about a week or so, and we're talking about that next here on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.